Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio, where we bring you information about Minnesota's National Guard, the military community, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Program, and Department of Veterans Affairs. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force and a member of the VFW and American Legion. Now, here's Tom Lyons.
Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we'll hear the story of one of Minnesota's true heroes, and we'll visit with the Minnesota Patriot Guard and hear about this year's Patriot Ride. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
Throughout the summer, the Minnesota Twins are recognizing Beyond the Yellow Ribbon networks that support military members, veterans, and their families. What a truly fantastic recognition program they've developed. 4 years ago, the Minnesota Twins put our Beyond the Yellow Ribbon logo in their outfield and said, "We want to thank the people who support military families," and they're doing it. Just prior to the game, Yellow Ribbon networks are being brought to the Twins' home plate bi-monthly and are recognized for their unique contributions to our statewide Beyond the Yellow Ribbon effort. Thanks to the Minnesota Twins and to the more than 250 Yellow Ribbon networks throughout our great state. It is only with your support that we are able to keep the Minnesota National Guard a competent, ready force.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now is a Silver Star recipient, Corporal Ethan Nagel. Corporal, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Corporal, can we go back a few years? Where did your military career start?
Well, I graduated high school from Lutheran High School in Bloomington in 2005. I enlisted in the Marine Corps, went in July of 2005, and then went to infantry school in between October and January of 2005, 2006, and then deployed to Iraq for my first combat deployment in March of 2006.
And at what period in your life had you made the decision you were going to become a member of the United States Marines?
I was very young. Both my grandparents served in the Marine Corps. One was in the Pacific in World War II on my father's side, and then my mother's side, my grandfather served in Korea. So there was a kind of a tradition there. Neither one of my parents or uncles had served, but it kind of always stayed with me, and I always kind of wanted to prove myself, you know, to be a Marine and to be the best. And the Marine Corps Infantry was where that was at.
Did you grow up hearing some stories then?
Not really, actually. My grandfather sadly passed when I was in second grade, and he was in the Pacific. And then my grandfather from Korea is a very quiet man. But he had recently started opening up more and more over the last few years about Korea to just me and my brother, who are Marines. So I think he believes, you know, we have that connection of the Marine Corps, and in his later years, he's a little bit slower, but now he loves to talk to us about his Marine Corps experience. So that's kind of the first time I've heard of his stories from Korea and whatnot. But, I guess just through the years, the Marines I'd heard were the best, and their infantry was kind of legendary amongst, you know, World War II, Korea and Vietnam. And they were some, you know, very hardworking, very, a challenging branch to go into, especially in the infantry. So I wanted to challenge myself. And then once 9/11 happened, which I was a freshman in high school, and then my sophomore year in high school, we invaded Iraq. And so there's two wars going on, and, you know, I felt that I need to serve my country and go and fight and become a Marine infantryman.
So there was no stopping you?
No stopping me. My parents actually tried to diverting me to another different skill set in the military and the Marine Corps, but I refused and was pretty stubborn and hard-headed about that. So I joined the infantry and became an infantryman amongst the job skills in the infantry. And then after my first combat deployment in 2006 into the El Anbar Haditha Triad, came back and tried out for the Marine Corps Scout Sniper Platoon. And then made that, and then they sent me to Marine Corps Scout Sniper Basic Course and went through 11 weeks of training and became a Marine Corps Scout Sniper. So it was probably one of my proudest accomplishments in the Marine Corps. It's pretty challenging and pretty hard to make it all the way through with all the various skill sets, both mentally and physically.
Did you realize you were getting in deeper and deeper, and you're probably going to go to the places that were More dangerous and more dangerous?
That's correct. Actually, I did. I mean, that's, you know, just like other veterans and guys that I came up with, and the want and need to go back into combat kept pulling me. And I knew that the Marine Corps Scout Snipers were some of the best snipers in the world, and they are the best Marines within the unit. And so that's where I wanted to be, keep moving up, or at least keep challenging myself to keep going forward and try to help out, you know, my buddies that were still in the regular infantry, and by, you know, eliminating insurgents through IED emplacements and stuff like that. And that was the best way I could do it. So to help out my brothers in arms, it was, you know, it felt right to go somewhere more, you know, specialized or at the time very challenging, but, you know, you could make a difference in eliminating targets and saving lives. So I went that route and returned back to Iraq into the Fallujah provinces in 2007 to 2008. And then came back from that, and I volunteered to go to Afghanistan after my brother, Anthony Nagel, Sergeant Anthony Nagel, went through Helmand Province in 2008. I went down, and he pushed through, and he was telling me his story, so I wanted to get into the action in Afghanistan. So I volunteered for the advisor embedded trainer teams, which was a 10-month deployment and training and advising and fighting alongside Afghan National Army in combat.
We're speaking with Corporal Ethan Nagel, a Silver Star recipient on Minnesota Military Radio. Corporal, we hear this over and over again that Marines, Army, a lot of the services, the guys have been off to combat and they volunteer to go back, and even when they're wounded, they want to go back. What's your motivation? You wanted to go back, and you wanted to go back. I can see you wanted to go back badly.
Yes. In fact, a few of us every tour always wanted to stay and fight and extend. I guess it's just kind of the draw, but it's also the feeling of making a difference and helping out the next unit coming in, and the progress that you see with the people, the local and people of the region, you know, both in Iraq and Afghanistan. You get used to the area, you get used to the families that are there, and you're helping them out in both in civil projects, and you're also helping protect them from various insurgents groups like Al-Qaeda or the Taliban or the Qani network at the time. And they're great people, you know, in both countries that you want to help, especially in Afghanistan. I was very drawn to it, and combat was, you know, where we needed to be. It felt like where we need to be, that we can make a difference. So a lot of us try to keep going back and keep trying to improve the situation on the ground and to keep going after, you know, bad, evil men. So
when you volunteered for sniper training, was that so you could go back and protect your buddies?
That's correct. Yeah, it's this, it was an elite, you know, group of guys that were in the infantry that helped eliminate targets, and but were emplacing at the time improvised explosive devices, which at the time in 2005, 2006, 2007 were affecting the forces greatly. I mean, I was hit by a few my first deployment, and as well as my third, and then my second deployment I was a sniper, and so what you could do is you know, go to those spots where, you know, insurgents would emplace these bombs and then try to eliminate them, or at least try to deter the threat, so that when your friends that are patrolling during the day or at night, you can overwatch them and sniper hides and make sure that if anything happens or if somebody tries to do something, you can be able to deal with it and then protect them, and then they back you up as well.
So in your time in the Marine Corps, you were deployed three times then?
That's correct. Three combat tours with a total of 24 months.
And one day in July in 2009, you were out on a patrol, and you ended up receiving a Silver Star for that, and we're going to talk about that in the second segment here. How long were you in the Marines, and what happened after that?
Well, I was in the Marines for 4 years and 4 months, and then after I'd gotten out, I decided to do some contracting overseas. At the time, there was another need to for logistics and supplies in Afghanistan. So I returned to do metal detectors. I trained Army soldiers as well as Polish soldiers up in the northeast of Afghanistan on new metal detectors to help detect different types of improvised explosive devices or bombs in both hillsides and the roads that were lighter and were more effective than the heavier metal detectors that they were being issued at the time. So I did that for a few months to help, you know, establish something and money-wise, and then also help guys on the ground in Afghanistan. So I returned from that, and then I then worked for Z Services as advanced stack security. And then once I was vetted and trained for that and deployed, I came back and decided to do mobile protection, which was based out of Kabul, Afghanistan, protecting the U.S. diplomats, VIPs. And then I did that for the last year and then returned back to Minnesota.
And now you're a member of the Minnesota Army National Guard.
That's correct. I joined up about 2 years ago, but then I took inactive orders so that I could finish my job working in Afghanistan, and then came back here in September, and then currently trying out for Special Forces out of North Carolina, a National Guard unit out of there.
And if you get accepted for that, that's a lot more training? And
that's correct, yes. It's, if I get selected for the unit, then I have to go to the official Army selection, and if I make the Army selection, then I go through about 2 years of training at the qualification course. And then from there, it's
Corporal, there seems to be a pattern here, Corporal.
Yes, there is, yeah. My parents are getting a little strung out on it, so it's, you know, it's stressful on them, but they're just happy to see me back in the States. So I've spent been over to the Middle East about 8 times now, so.
We're going to have to take a short break. When we come back, I want to ask you about that day, July 29th, 2009, when you were in action and some things happened, and you ended up receiving a Silver Star for your actions. We're speaking with Corporal Ethan Nagel on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. I've been joined today by Silver Star recipient Corporal Ethan Nagel. And I want to read a little bit from the citation that was put in requesting that he be awarded a Silver Star for his actions on July 29th, 2009. On this day, Corporal Ethan Nagel performed in a courageous and exceptional manner while under heavy and concentrated small arms, machine gun, and rocket-propelled grenade fire from close range. From superior number of enemy fighters, while under this intense and close-range fire, Corporal Nagel refused to leave behind a fallen soldier. Suffering from multiple shrapnel wounds himself, Corporal Nagel disregarded his own personal safety and exhibited heroic and extraordinary battlefield valor while administering medical aid to a grievously wounded Special Operations soldier from Operations Detachment Alpha 0114. At one point, firing his M9 service pistol at approaching enemy fighters from ranges of 20 meters while simultaneously holding an occlusive dressing on the fallen soldier's wounds, Corporal Nagel heads steadfast in face of overwhelming odds. Persevering through this engagement and eliminating untold enemy fighters himself, Corporal Nagel was the decisive factor that turned the tide of battle. Corporal Nagel's actions, heroic actions, prevented the very real possibility of this gravely wounded soldier from being captured by the enemy. By his bold leadership, undaunted courage, and complete dedication to duty, Corporal Nagel reflected great credit upon himself and upheld the highest traditions of the United States Marine Corps and the United States Naval Service. Corporal Nagel, a person doesn't just wake up one day and decide they're going to go out and earn a Silver Star, but you were put in circumstances on July 29th, 2009 that were pretty serious. Can you take us through that day? We're out on was this a routine patrol?
This patrol that we'd gone out on was a planned one to head to the northern part of our valley that we had not been to yet. Basically, that day was just to engage what we call a key leader engagement. So we just came and showed up into a village, and we requested for all the village elders to come out, and we would just talk to them about what they needed, how they felt about, you know, U.S. forces and presence, and get an idea of what their thoughts were of what was going on within their own valley.
How many men were with you on that patrol?
There's actually a good amount. There was two or three elements that were positioned throughout the valley, because there's only one road in and one road out, and the terrain was very austere, so it was very steep, very rocky. There was no other roads. They couldn't drive across the plain. It was one road. That was it. So with us, we went out, and that morning we had about 4 or 5 gun trucks, Humvees. And then once we were done with that engagement in the morning, we decided to cut off with about, I think it was 18 of us total, on a patrol to either try to counter any kind of ambushes that would take place on the next key leader engagement, because that was what the enemy would do. Is once they saw you in the area, they would set up and ambush you at another spot. So we decided to get off. It was four Special Forces soldiers, myself, another Marine who was there to replace me, and as well as, I believe, 11 to 12 of my Afghan recon platoon who I was advising. So I was in charge of them. And we went down and decided to patrol through a riverbed to get to the next spot. And that's when it all started breaking loose. We could hear them in the brush, and then after we had actually heard the enemy talking, that's when they opened fire on us, machine gun fire. And that's when I was first initially wounded in the face, took shrapnel and light peppering to my nose and eye and to the left side of my face. So that was the initial contact, and then we hit them hard back with everything we had, machine gun fire. I had a M14 sniper rifle, or DM rifle roll, as I like to call it, and along with my friend, who was a Special Forces soldier, we returned fire, and then we hit them pretty hard and got them to push back, and another Special Forces soldier was wounded in the leg, and I assessed his wounds, and he was fine, so we kept pushing up and out of the riverbed. And then still somewhat under fire, but it was a little bit of a lull, kind of that initial reaction to both sides of kind of everybody was still trying to get all their stuff back together. And then once we established ourselves up on a ridge, that's when we started engaging multiple targets of insurgents. And that's when they also started coming back at us again as well. And then
kind of the ebb and flow of that patrol and that battle then.
Yep, exactly. And then we actually secured the high ground after we started engaging targets, and then we were about to make our way back to the road. And at this time, we were being engaged from the north, east, and south of our positions. We started moving back, both me and this other Marine, started moving back to the road to basically establish and secure it. But then Chief Warrant Officer Vos decided that we should stay. And the situation at that time was, you know, we were in contact, but nothing out of the ordinary, nothing that was, you know, strenuous at the time that called for more reinforcements.
Did the rest of the force you started out with in the morning know that you were under attack?
Yes, they had heard us over the radio as well as the gunfire. And then shortly after that, that's when we started getting hit from the west, which is where I was holding security, and then I was wounded a second time, and that's when everything started breaking loose. They hit us with everything they got from all sides. So that point, we were in a surrounded in a 360, and then we had to actually start closing our perimeter because they started getting closer. And that's when Chief Warrant Officer Vos was hit, we were still taking fire. And then once I heard man down, you know, I'd asked who was, you know, the Special Forces soldier next to him. I was like, is he all right? You know, what's going on? And he just kept screaming man down. So I ran over. I made sure that the Marine that was holding the security with me, that he could hold it. Like, you know, are you okay? Is everything all right? You know, you have ammunition, everything. So he said, yeah, you know, good to go. And then I took off running. And then it was pretty surreal because it was very focused on getting to him. I had extensive medical training through my corpsmen and medics, as well as previous combat trauma experience in Iraq. So when I got to Chief Warrant Officer Vos, it was, you know, he was shot pretty. It was not a good situation. He was bleeding, and you could tell he was in shock.
He was seriously wounded.
Seriously wounded, yes. And I started working on him. At this time, we were still taking them. That's when they started really barraging us with fire. And we were engaging back and forth, burning through ammunition. I actually went black on ammo or ran out of ammunition in my M14. Had to use my pistol, as well as at another point in time, I had to pick up a machine gun from another soldier to use that as well. And at that time, Chief Warrant Officer Vos was getting better, so I actually managed to, you know, have him come around. His eyes started coming back, more color in his face, but the way that the wound was, he started losing blood again, and he started to fade quicker. So that, I guess, was probably the most frustrating aspect, was we got to him, you know, I assessed his wounds, fixed his wounds before the Special Forces medic got there. You know, he was good to go. You know, medevac, we had thought the medevac was coming in, but it was going to be a lot longer than we expected because everybody was in contact. The whole valley had erupted in gunfire. So all the other elements were actually getting pinned down because they were trying to overrun our position while our mobile elements were trying to come and bail us out. So they were pinning our mobile element down so that they could pin us down and try to overrun us. And so we hit them back and just kept our perimeter and made sure, you know, that, you know, we held everything that we could. And I held my ground with Vos. This gunfire kept going over our heads. It felt like it was getting closer and closer, but just held my ground and made sure that, you know, nothing was going to happen to him, you know, if he was going to die on the battlefield or if we could get him back and save him. So no matter what, we weren't going to give up. And so
the Taliban like to try to get prisoners and take guys then?
Exactly, yeah. They over the years, they like to take prisoners and use them examples, of, you know, on video and distribute them among their followers and whatnot. So, you know, we were going to, you know, make sure that, you know, we took as many of them with us, you know, if they were going to try and grab us. So so we hit them hard with everything we had. And then once we had actually took Doug and finally got him back into another area, Chief Warrant Officer DeVos, and started working on him some more. And then we just kept taking fire, and then finally air support came in. And it was started lighting up targets all around us, very close Kiowa support from helicopters. And then that's when our mobile element finally made it up to us. And then they sent guys down, and we're still under contact. And they came down with ammunition, and we scrounged together what we could. And then I coordinated the defense of the medevac. So when the helicopters came in, they were going to be under fire. So we engaged targets, and I coordinated with everybody that just showed up where, you know, all the machine gun positions were coming, where the machine gun fire was coming from. So as soon as the medevac bird came in, we all started laying down cover fire almost in every direction so that the Black Hawk could come in and take Vos off. So, and then after that, that's when we gathered our things and moved back to the road and then started heading back south.
We have to take a short break, and we'll be right back with more of the story of Corporal Ethan Nagel. Please stay with us.
Hi, this is Bill Popp of the Minnesota Military Family Foundation. An Army squad is made up of 8 soldiers, and when the squad is on patrol, each soldier is dependent on each other for safety. When a soldier is distracted because of a financial crisis with the family back home, that puts every soldier on the squad at risk. The Minnesota Military Family Foundation helps turn a bad situation into a positive one. The foundation provides financial support during a financial crisis at home. This helps re-energize the soldier. The soldier feels the financial burden lifted and has feelings of pride because of the support from the community at home. When the soldier is no longer focused on the financial crisis at home, the soldier is able to stay engaged in the mission and do his duty to protect other soldiers in the squad. When we help one soldier, we're helping all soldiers. When we help one military family, we're helping all military families. If you're in a position to help, please donate. Go to MinnesotaMilitaryFamilyFoundation.org.
We're speaking with Corporal Ethan Nagel, a Silver Star recipient on Minnesota Military Radio. Corporal, it sounds to me like, from what you just told us, that it was just another day and you were just doing your job.
It was a little hairier than most of our regular days, but it was, you know, our job, and that's what, you know, we're trained to do. And, you know, we're supposed to go into hostile areas and engage key leaders. And if we make contact, especially we were in Taliban territory, that was, you know, their turf, and we knew that. But we also were prepared for that if they decide to engage us. Sadly, Vos passed. But after the after action and everything, we ended up having 25 enemy KIA, plus, you know, few here, more in there, here and there, that were coming in with the intelligence reports. And ironically, after that firefight, we had killed 3 JPEL targets. They were key leaders in the Al-Qaeda organization. And it was a coincidence because a few days prior in that valley, they had actually had a key leader, insurgent leader meeting, and it involved about 13 to 14 key leaders within Afghanistan. They're both coming in from Pakistan, and they were actually all there, like having a get together, I guess you would say, in the valley.
You came upon the remnants of that meeting.
Exactly. We came in, they wanted to flex their muscle, and they obviously did it in the wrong time because we ended up smoking 3 of their guys and significantly damaged their network.
Spoiled their day, didn't you?
Yep, exactly. Actually, we had a few organizations that were in the secret realm that came and, you know, gave us thanks. We're like, hey, you know, you eliminated our targets, so now we have to spin up some new ones. And so that was a, you know, in the remnants and, you know, in the tragedy that Vos was killed, you know, we hit him hard and we hit him hard back, and that was a result. And, you know, so it was kind of bittersweet.
Corporal, when did you find out that you'd been put in for a Silver Star?
It was actually wasn't until after I was out of the Marine Corps, and My friends had kind of hinted at it, but they were, you know, told not to tell me in case something had happened or if it was denied or whatnot or going through the system. And
a lot of your buddies had received awards as well.
Yes, there was a few that received Bronze Stars with Valor for that same day, and you know, they were kept telling me, "Hey, you're in for a big award. You're in for a big award." And I didn't know. You know, I'm not a, you know, I didn't do it for medals. I didn't do it for any of that. You know, it's like I said, it was, you know, did my job, and I, you know, any one of them would have done it for me too if I had been wounded at the same time. And
so when and where did you receive the Silver Star?
It was, I believe it was December 16th at the Marine Air Wing here in Minnesota, Marine Reserve Center, Navy and Reserve Center.
And did you have some family members there?
Yes. My mom had contacted a lot of family friends and family as well. So, and my friends as well from high school and from the years after when I was in the military, flew up from New York, North Carolina, and a few other places to come attend the ceremony. And I think there's about 150 to 200 personnel there, plus with the Marines in uniform, along with the Navy and some Army as well. So.
And your grandparents?
Yes, my grandparents were there from my mother's side and my grandma from my father's side. And they were very proud. And you know, it's a pretty surreal day. So.
And you met a Marine general that day.
Yes, yes. Marine General Hartzell came down to present the award and talk on my behalf and walk the audience through what had happened and the significance of the Silver Star and the events that took place on the 29th of July.
How did you feel? Did it feel like that was you that performed so well that day?
It was pretty surreal because, like I said, it's a big award that, you know, you don't ever think that you don't shoot for these kind of awards. You don't go for them. I mean, you do your job and then you go home and you do the best that you can at the time that you can do them. And so it was very surreal, and it was. You know, my heart was beating pretty hard, you know, I was pretty nervous up on the stage, and it was surreal, but it was also, you know, it kind of brought back all those memories and whatnot, and it kind of gave closure to the whole situation, because even the Special Forces guys that I served with were like, "Hey, man, you know, it's about time you received it," and they, you know, they gave me congratulations, and you know, it just kind of, 4 years later, you know, it kind of gave closure to the whole thing.
Bottom line is, when you're out in combat, you're taking care of your buddies, right?
Exactly. Yep. You do anything to take care of them, you bring them back, and they'll do the same for you. And, you know, you don't quit until you get back home or until you get back to base. And even then, you know, the fight's not over. So,
congratulations on being the recipient of a Silver Star. And thank you for serving our country so selflessly.
Oh, thank you very much.
It's been great to have you on the show today. And we hope to see you again soon.
All right. Thanks for having me.
That was Corporal Ethan Nagel, Minnesota Silver Star recipient on Minnesota Military Radio. Joining me now from the flag line of the Minnesota Patriot Guard is Tim Leonard. Tim, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Well, thank you, Tom.
Tim, we're going to have a little bit longer discussion today because we're going to talk about the Minnesota Patriot Guard and all your riders, and we're also going to talk about the Patriot Ride, but we'll get to that in the next segment. First, I want to ask you, we usually don't have enough time to ask you this, but when did you join the Minnesota Patriot Guard, and what caused you to do that?
I actually joined in early 2006, and I heard about the Patriot Guard. My daughter even started talking about it. She was in college at the time, and I found a way to thank my cousin, which we lost in Vietnam. And back then, families were closer together. My cousin was more like a brother than I was, or to me, than normal families. And when I lost him, it was devastating. But I was never able to do anything about it. So when I had a chance to go out and show the honor, dignity, and respect to their military, I just jumped on the bike and headed to the next mission. And ever since then, it just got more and more involved all the time.
Now, Tim, I know you don't like riding in cages, but when did you start riding in motorcycles?
Oh, I started riding motorcycles about 47 years ago.
A couple of days ago, huh? A
couple of days ago.
And you like riding them?
I love riding motorcycles. I usually get between 18 and 21,000 miles in a year.
Wow, I didn't know that, Tim.
Yeah, I go through a motorcycle every 4 to 5 years.
My goodness. Now, a lot of the Patriot Guard riders do ride motorcycles.
They do.
But that's not a requirement, is it?
That is not a requirement.
What are the requirements?
The requirement is respect for the military and the freedoms that they allow us, wanting to show honor, dignity, and respect to our fallen heroes, and a 3x5 flag, and, of course, you already have the heart to be there.
And you've already explained to me month after month that if we want to arrive in a cage, a car, we're welcome to show up as well.
Everybody's always welcome to show up.
We just hide the car out back, right?
Not necessarily. Although it is a lot easier to park 200 motorcycles than it is 200 cars.
I'm sure it is. We're speaking to Tim Leonhart from the Minnesota Patriot Guard. Tim, I told you this a while back here. I lost a brother-in-law. He was 83 years old, but he had served in the United States Army. And I was talking to the family, and I told them about the Minnesota Patriot Guard, and they just said, we'd love it. He would have loved it if they'd come. And so I showed him how to go to the website and apply for the riders to come out to the funeral. And it was up in Anoka, and your new ride captain was up there, and busy Friday, because it was a busy Friday out at Fort Snelling. But I think there were maybe 18 riders or so, and they manned the two doors, and it's a very emotional experience. And the family didn't realize what it was, but they were absolutely in awe and thrilled. And this gentleman, Ray Loggy, had three kids and two daughters and a son. And his son came up and asked me, he said, can I go out and talk to those guys? And I said, they'd love it. And he went out and had a chat with every one of your riders. And he came back in, and it was just like he was just filled with emotion and thrilled that you were there when he lost his dad.
It was an honor and dignity and respect that brings everybody there to do that.
And at the end of that funeral, all your guys, all your riders lined the sidewalk between the church and the hearse, and everybody from the church walked out and down the flag line, and of course they put him in the hearse, and your guys stayed until it was over, and I thanked them all at the end, and it was quite an event, and it's emotional, and I just want to thank you and all your guys.
It's an honor.
Tim, one more time, who's eligible to become a Patriot Guard rider, and how do they do it?
Anybody, and just go to mnpatriotguard.org, and on the left-hand side it says Join Us. Click on that. It puts you on our mailing list or email list, and we send you out information to tell you what missions are available in your area, and we'd love to have anybody that can.
Okay, Tim, we're going to have to go to break in a minute here, but I know you've got your big annual fundraiser coming up. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
We do. We have the Patriot Ride coming up. It'd be June 14th, and it's a pretty fun day. It's a family event. We'll have a guest coming up here to talk a little bit more about it and shortly, and it's a good deal.
All right, we have to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to have another guest, and we're going to talk about the Patriot Ride. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Hello, I'm Tom Lyons, founder and principal partner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities mergers and acquisitions advisory firm where we help business owners to plan, prepare, and execute a strategy to complete the deal. When I'm not hosting Minnesota Military Radio on this station, I'm hard at work helping business owners with their exit strategies. If you're interested in selling a business, please give us a call at 763-231-4200 at Phalon Partners Limited. We've been bringing buyers and sellers together since 1985 and would welcome an opportunity to help you. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we'll get back to our interview with the Minnesota Patriot Guard. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shelliteau.
Our volunteers at each of our veterans' homes across the state of Minnesota contribute tremendously to the quality of life of our veterans. Volunteers provide invaluable support by sharing their experience, time, and compassion with our residents. Family members, friends, and community members play a key role in helping us serve those who served through generous donations of time and money. It is impossible to calculate the amount of caring and sharing that these volunteers provide to residents at our homes. Our veterans put everything on the line to protect our freedom. We may never be able to repay them for their sacrifice, but we can show them just how much we appreciate all that they have done. If you or someone you know would like to make a difference, please contact MinnesotaVeteran.org.
Thank you, Commissioner Shelledo. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Now let's get back to our interview with the Minnesota Patriot Guard. Tim, just before we went to break, we started talking about the Patriot Ride, which is your big annual event.
Yes, it is.
And you've brought someone here with you today to help us talk about that.
We did. We brought Captain Mark Guile.
Mark, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Tom.
He calls you Captain. That's because you're part of the Minnesota Army National Guard.
That's correct. I've been in the Guard for 20 years, and I've been with the Patriot Guard for a little over 8 years.
And what part of the Army Guard are you in?
I'm in the 1st of 34th Armored Brigade Combat Team.
All right. Well, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. You're also, I understand, on the ride committee for the Patriot Ride.
Yes, yes.
Can you tell us a little bit? I understand this is the ninth year.
This is the ninth year. We started this back in 2005. We've switched locations every once in a while just basically account for the people that are actually coming to the ride. So when we started off, it was a very small ride, and over the past nine, or coming up to our ninth year, the ride has grown tremendously.
So are you going to be out of Ham Lake again this year?
Yep, we'll be out of Lions Park in Ham Lake.
Tim, you know where that is, don't you?
I do.
How many times have you been up there?
Oh, let's see. I usually end up doing a lot of the pre-work for the road guarding and things like that, so probably 15 times every time we have a Patriot ride.
Now, Tim, we've talked about this on the show before, but the Minnesota Patriot Guard riders go out on missions all year long, usually about 500 missions. We send troops off on deployments. We welcome them home, and, of course, we provide honor, dignity, respect at the funerals of the fallen, and especially of any active duty troops that have gone. But besides that, the Minnesota Patriot Guard riders also raise some funds to help some other causes.
We do. We do. And this is usually our biggest event that we do. It helps a lot of people.
So, Mark, you're on the ride committee. This is the biggest event of the year that's not a mission.
That's correct.
And tell us about it. It goes back to 8-9 years. What are you trying to accomplish? How many people show up? What is this all about?
Well, the Patriot Ride came about to basically show our support to our service members, past and present. And it was one way for us riders to get together to do that. We raise, since 2005, we've raised a little over $700,000 towards the Patriot Guard and the MMAF, the Minnesota Military Assistance Funds. And that's our two big organizations that we contribute all of our money to for this bike ride.
So it was my understanding that you actually partner with the Minnesota Military Appreciation Fund to put on the ride, and they take part of the proceeds to provide grants to soldiers who have served overseas.
That's correct.
If I'm reading this right, they pay cash grants of up to $5,000 to families of fallen soldiers, $2,000 to $10,000 to those wounded in combat, and 500 of those who have served honorably in a combat zone. And since 2005, they've given out 11,000 grants totaling $11 million. And one more time, the Minnesota Patriot Guard riders are helping a tremendous cause.
Yes, we all come together to do this. I mean, this is why we're there.
Now, we went up and recorded the show there two summers ago and put that on the air. I think Doug Bly was still the captain at that point. But I don't think I've ever seen that many motorcycles in one place in my life.
Then you missed last year's bike ride. I would say that last year we had over 2,500 motorcyclists that showed up, and probably about another 1,000 spectators that came to see that ride.
Now, when is it 50 miles?
It's going to be last year we did a 50-mile ride with a midway stop. This year we're just going to do a 50-mile ride, no midway stop, and end up back at Lions Park.
Now, when the first guys leave, if you got that many motorcycles, are the last guys gone yet?
Oh yeah, we have a pretty good ride captain that leads this group out, and then with Tim being on the road guards to ensure that the safety part of it, it's a safe ride. It's a great ride.
Now, when we were up there, there was a lot of other organizations. I think I saw some soldiers up there on a drill weekend helping out with some things, and I saw a lot of firemen and policemen, and it's quite a task to put this together, isn't it?
It is. We start probably, the ride committee probably gets together starting in October, and we start discussing the next year's ride and what we have to do to get there. And we meet once a month to discuss everything that needs to happen to get this ride going, because we want it to be the best ride every year.
How closely do you work with Ham Lake?
Pretty closely. I mean, they're not, we work with them individually. So all of us people on the committee have different things that we do. So some of us work a little closer than others, but we do work well with them. And Ham Lake has partnered with us very well over the last few years to make sure that it's a great ride.
Well, it's got to be a little work on their part, too, to let the community know the date of the ride and what's going on. And you know, it's not every day you see 2,500 motorcycles all in one spot.
That's correct.
Yeah. Ham Lake was very welcoming when we were looking for a new venue for the Patriot ride a few years ago. They wanted us there.
We're speaking with Tim Leonhardt and Mark Guile from the flag line of the Minnesota Patriot Guard on Minnesota Military Radio. So, Mark, you work on this almost immediately after the last ride, I'm assuming, and there's a lot of things to pull together. Can you tell us about the day, pre-ride activities, what's going on in the ride, what's going on afterwards, what's it going to look like for those that haven't been there?
All right. Well, our pre-ride kickoff event starts on the 31st of May, which is when we hold a red, white, and blue event at the Cowboy Jacks. Now, that basically is when we start all our pre-ride registration, and people have a chance to actually sign up or buy a raffle ticket for the motorcycle that we'll be drawing the day of the event. The day of the event starts at 9 o'clock with registration, and we normally will kick things off right around 11 o'clock, and we do a little morning speech, and then we do we have the national anthem speak, and then we do the Pledge of Allegiance, and then that normally leads us off onto our ride.
Okay, and for those that want to participate in the ride, the cost?
Well, the cost, if you just want to participate and come down to the ride itself, and just be a spectator, you can just come down and see the ride. There's no cost to that. So we welcome anybody to come down there to see what's going on. Now, to be on the ride, then depending on when you sign up, depends on the cost. So pre-ride registration, we dock off $10 from the normal ride itself.
So it's $25.
Yep.
And if you register the day of the event, it's $35.
That's correct.
And I'm here to testify that if you show up in a cage, they've got parking lots where they send you to park, and you can walk in and you can watch the event, which is pretty interesting. And you've got some vendors on the ground.
We're going to have quite a few vendors on the ground this year. So this is the first year we're really opening up the vendor list. Normally, we've kept it a little smaller. But this year, with listening to the riders and the people that come to the event, we've opened it up a little bit more.
And following the ride, you're going to have, in Lions Park, you're going to have some activities afterwards.
We do. So to conclude the ride, normally we have a guest speaker or a few guest speakers that will happen or come to it. And this year we have Mike Ritland, who is with the Warrior Dog Foundation, and he's going to be our guest speaker for the event. And he helps a foundation that transitions dogs from an operational environment and back into the community, and rehabilitates these dogs that come from the special forces.
That should be an interesting speech.
It will be. It will be.
And before and after the ride, there's food and beverages, and after the ride, there's going to be some live music. And, of course, I hope you get some great weather. We'll have to talk to Chaplain Wynn and see if he can put in a good word for you.
Yeah, I think he will. We also have one event that we're working right now to have a Special Forces Navy SEAL parachute into the ride.
Is that confirmed?
It's not confirmed quite yet, but I believe it'll happen.
That from the look on your face, Captain, I'm betting on you. It's probably going to happen. Captain, any final thoughts about the ride?
I welcome anybody to come down. The weather's going to be great. It always will be. That's what I always say. So come down to the event and support a great cause.
And it is a fun time to go up there and just watch it and hear all those motorcycles start up all at once.
You know, minus going to any other the big motorcycle rallies, this is probably one of the places you'll ever be able to go to and see this many motorcycles support in one single event.
Tim, we just got about 30 seconds left. Any final thoughts for our listeners today?
Oh, just that anybody's welcome to come to our mission. Anybody's welcome to join. Just have a 3x5 flag and a big heart and honor, dignity, and respect for our military heroes.
And if our listeners want to sign up, all they have to do is go to your website.
Yes, they do, mnpatriotguard.org.
And click to sign up, and then they'll get emails of all of the mission statements that go out.
Yes.
Gentlemen, Tim, Mark, you're doing a great job. Patriot Guard riders do a fabulous job, as I've testified before. Thank you for everything you do, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Tom.
This is Tim Leonhardt and Mark Guile from the flag line of the Minnesota Patriot Guard. We're just about out of time. If you have a mailbag question or suggestion for a topic you'd like us to address, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com and click on Contact Us to send us a note. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Corporal Ethan Nagel, Tim Leonhardt, and Mark Giles, Commissioner Larry Shelato of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week as we discover an innovative clinic for our women veterans right here at our Minneapolis VA. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
You've been listening to Minnesota Military Radio with Tom Lyons. Tom is the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition firm. This has been a production of Clear Channel, MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com, the Minnesota National Guard, BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org, and the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Podcasts of the show are available at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.